From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the first day of September 2010. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services. He's in Oakland, Illinois. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons Climbers Facility in Delphi, Indiana. In agricultural news, agriculture is helping to keep unemployment rates low. Ethanol production is setting new demand highs, and there's been a call for the continued use of antibiotics in the livestock industry. We'll have more complete details a bit later in the program. Also today, we'll hear from Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. We'll update the agricultural weather forecast. And then in the second half hour of our program, we'll hear from the Farm Progress Show site, Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson there. On that very wet site, 4 inches of rain overnight in Boone, Iowa. She'll give us the latest update of what the farm economy in Iowa looks like and how the Farm Progress Show is holding up. It all happens on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media.
Lernard Seed Service supports agricultural programs as an additional service to its customers. Lernard Seed Service is an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products, including Genuity SmartStax corn hybrids, to farmers throughout East Central Illinois. Lernard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
In Chicago, on this Wednesday afternoon, futures finished like this. The nearby contract and the soft red winter wheat pit at 675.5 for the September, up 23. July, a soft red harvest month, 715.75, up 19. Hard red in Kansas City at 712.25 for the wheat, up 24.5 cents. September corn futures back in Chicago from the CME Group, 432.25, up 7.75. December at 446.75, 7.5 higher, and the March at 459.75, up 7.5. May futures 466.25, 7.5 higher, and July up 7.25 at $4.71.75. December of next year at 450.25, up 6 cents a bushel. September soybeans $10.04.5, down 3.5. November at 10.05.5, down 4.5. January at 10.15, down 4.25 cents. And the March at 10.20.75, down 3.5. July beans 10.32.5, 2.25 lower. November at $10 a penny and a quarter, down 1.5 cents. Livestock numbers finished. The nearby feeder cattle at 113.87.5, down 22.5. October live cattle at 97.75, were up 47.5. And October lean hogs today at 74.95, were down 20 cents. This is the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. October crude oil, $73.91 a barrel, $1.99 higher. Ethanol at $1.94.4, up 6 tenths of a cent. Natural gas at $3.75.2, down 6 4 tenths of a cent. RBOB gasoline at $1.89.1, 3 3 tenths higher, and the diesel fuel or heating oil, a nickel and a tenth of a cent higher at $2.04.3. Gold futures at $1,246.30 an ounce, down $2. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands just about 222 points higher at 10,236 on the day. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for Champaign-Urbana as delivered by the National Weather Service. They say this afternoon should be a few showers, a couple thunderstorms too. Mostly cloudy, a high near 85 degrees, south-southwest winds between 9 and 13 miles an hour this afternoon, gusting up to 16 miles an hour. The chance of precipitation 60% today, and then chance tonight at 60% as well. Showers and thunderstorms mostly likely. Should be cloudy, low around 70 degrees. Tomorrow, a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms. Mostly cloudy again, a high near 84. Southwest winds between 8 and 13, gusting to 16. And then tomorrow night, showers and thunderstorms remain likely. Not before 1 a.m. Mostly cloudy, a low of 62. South-southwest winds between 8 and 11 miles an hour. And then they'll turn around and come out of the west, northwest. Winds could gust as high as 15 miles an hour. The chance of precip on Thursday night is 60%. Partly cloudy on Friday, the high just 75 degrees. Breezy with a west-northwest wind between 11 and 20 miles an hour, with a gust up to 29 miles an hour. Friday night, clear and cool, a low around 52 degrees. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the hour.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
This is the Closing Market Report. It is a Wednesday afternoon. On the phone line with us, Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Paul.
Good afternoon, Todd.
I saw a combine in the field this morning, though he was waiting, not for very long, I doubt, to shuck some corn. The semis were there. They were ready to roll. Oakland taking corn in today?
Full throttle, and it's been that way for several days. And we examined some soybeans coming in on the sample, and they're a little smaller than normal. Disappointment in the corn yields. The moisture levels are dropping like a rock, and the bean yields, the early bean yields, are coming in pretty good. Private weather forecasters predicting an inch of rain here in east central Illinois. The major problem is that it is September 1st, and there was a lot of beans planted in the south half of Illinois and Indiana and Missouri, Ohio, that were planted late, and it'll be a question mark on just what kind of a stable yield they'll get.
Oh, an inch of rainfall might not be too bad for the beans, and it's dry enough here, I suppose I won't worry. If you get an inch of rainfall, the ground will still be good enough to support a combine. Out west, though, it's been really wet. They got 4 inches of rain in Ames.
Yeah, historically, we notice on yield observations that an early August rain is a real home run. The second week in August, after August the 10th, we don't see that much of an impact. In the third week, but we've been so dry over such a large area, it will be a surprise. Of course, the bean pod counts are good. The seed size is a little small in some areas. So I think the real verdict is going to be several weeks away on the beans. But FC Stone's coming out tonight, and it'll be interesting how they treat the dryness and, of course, the sudden death syndrome problems in Iowa.
They've had big numbers in the past. You think they'll still be big?
I think it'll be smaller. You know, it's just overwhelmingly disappointment. One large grain buying company that specializes in corn said every person that calls in says it's under a year ago, and that's a big statement right there.
That would be a big statement from a large firm. I suspect that is the case. What are you telling producers then about what they should do with the crop as they bring it across the scale?
Well, on the 25% of the corn that we sold, we bought it back at 419. And, of course, if you're a little bit timid, you can always use options. As far as the soybeans, basically we have those sold at $10 and looking for a place to make a move. Of course, that's you know, a fairly good price in both categories. But my general feeling is that we're going to see good demand in corn, and the Informa group made this comment that a 162 yield national average means 470 on the corn, and I thought that was an interesting correlation.
Why? I mean,
because we've got, you know, demand.
Did you think it was high
smaller
enough?
Smaller yield, and we'll have a 470 futures price.
My question here is if we have a 165, we go to a 162, is 470 high enough?
Well, it's a starter.
Okay.
We've lit a fire, Todd.
All right.
A statement right then and there.
Yeah, let's go back and take a look at this, because we started it all off sort of with the idea that, you know, well, not with the idea, with a rough harvest season in Russia, parts of Ukraine, Kazakhstan, really dry weather. We're going to have a short supply, apparently, at least in that region of wheat. There was some talk of substitution, that the export market for corn out of the U.S. would be really good. Russia said, no, we're not going to send any exports of wheat overseas, at least in through December 31st. And they put that in place on the 15th of August, or 15th of September. Let's see, they start that September 15th, don't they? They start that soon, or September 1. So we've got that fundamentally in place. We've got what you're calling probably a smaller crop for corn fundamentally in place. We've got a carryout that's well, it was 1.3, but if ADM is correct in their assumption that there's an extra 250 million out there in exports and we lose 75 or 100 or more than that in production, we're well below a billion bushel in carryout. Can you get really bullish to the corn market?
Well, yes. And the other factor is we're starting to see Egypt buy U.S. wheat. We're starting to see Germany buy U.S. wheat. And that's one reason why we saw it. Another factor is we're starting to see the Chinese economy have some positive economic growth. India is showing growth. So the good news is the dollar is starting to weaken, and we're starting to see a better stock market. And maybe prosperity is a Pacific Rim-led recovery. And, of course, you know, it's sort of like if my house in somewhere in the Pacific Rim costs $1 million, and I can buy the same house in somewhere in the U.S. for $250. Guess where we'll buy? So, you know, there's some relative values there, and hopefully, somewhere along the line, we'll get a at least a life raft or something to help push our economy to a better price level.
And are you worried? Speaking of the economy, are you worried very much that the economy might be one thing that could stop the friendly marketplace?
You know, one thing that I'm very optimistic about is a lot of farmers are buying and upgrading combines, and we understand there's several big plants going full throttle. A lot of my customers are going out to Moline to see them come off the assembly line. A lot of people have upgraded combines, and I think the agricultural sector, with some positive input from, you know, on ethanol legislation, E15 blending, we'll get the farm economy going. And this price level here is a big shot in the arm for the ag economy, no doubt about it.
Any final word before I let you go?
Have a profitable day.
You too, Paul. Thanks much. Paul Cooley is with ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Mark Report on a Wednesday afternoon.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and Moline. More information is available from Tom Testale in Morris at 815-941-2184. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
In today's agricultural news, the Business Insider reports that every U.S. state experienced job losses during the recent downturn, but that some states have a far lower unemployment rate than the 9.5% national average. Did you know that 8 of the 10 states with the lowest unemployment rates have one thing in common? It's agriculture. That's right. The 5 states with the lowest unemployment rates are North Dakota with 3.6%, South Dakota at 4.4%, Nebraska at 4.7%, and New Hampshire with a 5.8% unemployment rate. Vermont as well is low at 6%. And at number 7 is Kansas with an unemployment rate of 6.5%. Wyoming is at number 8 at 6.7%. And Iowa is number 10 with an unemployment rate of 6.8%. For each state, Business Insider mentions the importance of agriculture to the lower than average unemployment rate. Well, according to data released by the Energy Information Administration, that's the EIA, ethanol production reached an all-time high in June. At the same time, the Renewable Fuels Association reports ethanol demand also set a new record for the month. EIA says ethanol production in June was just over 854,000 barrels a day. That's an increase of 8,000 barrels a day from May, and it's more than 160,000 higher than June of 2009. Based on the first 6 months of 2010, U.S. ethanol production is running 12.87 billion gallons, on an annualized basis. As calculated by the RFA, ethanol demand also reached an all-time high of 857,000 barrels a day. The organic price election programs have been announced. USDA's Agriculture Risk Management Agency, or RMA, will offer an organic price election for four crops during the 2011 production year. Those crops include cotton, corn, soybeans, and processing tomatoes. Also, RMA released three reports that provide the framework for improvements to crop insurance programs that are available to producers of certified organic crops. The reports compile research into data that support a price election for organic crops. There's a new call for continued use of antibiotics. A public policy think tank, the Competitive Enterprise Institute, has submitted comments on an FDA proposal to limit the use of certain antibiotics in livestock, warning that a ban could unintentionally increase the threat of foodborne illness in the United States. The FDA draft guidance would prohibit the use of medically important antibiotics for growth promotion in food-producing animals like cows, pigs, and chickens, and would require veterinary oversight for the remaining uses. And finally today, did you watch the Emmys on Sunday night? HBO's Temple Grandin swept those Emmys, capturing some of the top awards, including Best Picture, Best Actress, Best Supporting Actress, and Best Supporting Actor. But there's more to the Temple Grandin story than meets the TV screen. Temple Grandin is a member of the American Meat Institute, serving as a lead instructor at AMI's Animal Care and Handling Conference, and is a past recipient of AMI's Industry Advancement Award. And that's a look at the day's agricultural news. Listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. Please do visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find all of our daily agricultural programming, from the pre-opening to the closing market reports, everything in between, and our flagship program for the weekend. We call that one Commodity Week. It's all at willag.org. Over on the right-hand side of the page, you'll also find a way to sign up for our weekend newsletter. Please do that at willag.org. Now up next, USDA has released farm income and export forecasts for 2010 and 2011. U.S. Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack called the reports encouraging and suggests those numbers show that the 2008 Farm Bill, the Obama administration's Recovery Act, and the hard work, innovation, and productivity of the nation's farm families have put American agriculture on the road to recovery.
After a significant decline of more than 20% in 2009, we looked at three measures of farm sector earnings, all of which are experiencing a rapid rebound and are forecast to rise in 2010. Our experts at ERS are forecasting that net cash income is expected to rise by more than 23% to $85.3 billion, which would be the second highest recorded on record. At the same time, net farm income has also rebounded, increasing by 24%, well above its previous 10-year average.
Bill Sachs says an increase in income from exports is just one factor.
We are raising our forecast for ag exports for fiscal year 2010 to $107.5 billion. This is the second highest year on record. This is a $3 billion increase from our May forecast and an $11 billion increase over last year. Agriculture is one of the few major sectors of the economy today that has a trade surplus, which we are now forecasting to be a little over $30 billion.
That progress, Vilsack says, is expected to continue with the outlook for the fiscal year 2011 being even more promising. The $113 billion projection for ag trade would top 2010 and near the record of $115 billion set in 2008. An ag trade surplus of around $31.5 billion is projected.
Increased ag exports, especially of grains and meat, are going to help drive this rebound. Not only will they create better income opportunities for our producers, but also they'll create more off-farm job opportunities. As we know, every $1 billion of ag exports supports somewhere between 8,000 and 9,000 jobs and generates an additional $1.4 billion in economic activity.
Bill Sachs says the news is not confined to one part of the country or sector of agriculture.
It's in all regions of the country. It's in virtually every commodity group. It's increasing opportunity at all levels in terms of farming operations, and it's also exciting to see off-farm income increase as well, because that means that some of the investments that are being made in rural development, business and industry loans, the broadband expansion, new wastewater treatment facilities, they're beginning to have an impact in this rural economy.
According to the secretary, asset values and average family farm household income, which includes that off-farm income, are also expected to increase.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Wednesday afternoon. Be sure to visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find all of our daily agricultural programming. On the phone line with us from the Andersons this afternoon should be the folks there to take care of purchasing. Hopefully one of them has joined us. Good afternoon to you.
Hi, this is Tara.
Oh, hi, Tara. You do get to do it.
Well, yes,
Tara,
they do.
You know, Tara, we haven't talked before, and you scampered off to see who else might be available. I didn't catch your last name. What is it?
Tara Oliver. I'm a new buyer here at Climbers.
Oh, a new buyer. Did they tell you? Did they tell you to get all your numbers in line so you're ready to give me bids too?
They gave me the 411 on what you would need, I believe. So.
Well, that's good. Okay. So, well, Tara. Well, you know what? Why don't you introduce yourself? Tell us where you came from to begin with.
Sure. My name is Tara Oliver. I grew up in a small town just outside of Fort Wayne, Indiana. Graduated from Purdue University and previously worked at ADM in Frankfurt.
All right. So tell me about what you've been experiencing there in the last couple of days. The producers bringing in a lot of corn over the last 2 days?
Not a huge influx. We've seen some new crop corn, and it's just kind of hit or miss in this area. There's some guys who have started getting in the fields and are bringing things in. Some fields are a little bit wet still with moistures in the low 20s, so those producers prefer to wait and maybe see if they can dry things down a little bit naturally before incurring the drying costs here at delivery.
Yeah, speaking of drying costs, your companion elevator here in Champaign County had offered a half-price deal for a while. That stopped. Did you ever do that?
We have not here at Climbers. I know we are having maybe some discounts or early drying discounts at Delphi for those beans that are delivered in early.
And what are your bids for the day?
We are, do you just want basis or cash price?
Cash price, please.
Okay. We do not have our bid sheet out just yet.
You can give me the basis then. That's perfectly fine.
Okay. Here at Climbers, we are going to be 32 under for fall delivery. Last half November, we go to 20 under. December is 10 under. January is 15 under. February is 13 under. March is 11 under. April is 14 under. May, 11 under. June, 13 under. July, 10 under. And next harvest, we're looking at 40 under.
Thank you much.
Mm-hmm.
That is Tara Oliver with the Andersons. We'll take a complete look at the ag weather in 2 minutes.
It's National Cherry Popover Day. Modern-day cherry production began in the mid-1800s when a Presbyterian missionary living in northern Michigan planted cherry trees, and much to the surprise of other farmers, the trees flourished. It's also St. Verana's Day, patron of millers. On this day in agricultural history in 1819, J.J. Wood patented a plow with interchangeable parts. In 1826, Alfred Eli Beach was born, an American inventor. He also was publisher of Scientific American magazine. In 1906, Carl August Fokers was born. He was the first to isolate vitamin B12. By the way, Fokers was born in Decatur, Illinois, and he graduated from the University of Illinois in 1928 with a degree in chemistry. In 1914, Martha, the last surviving passenger pigeon, died at the Cincinnati Zoo, the species having been commercially hunted to extinction. And in 1940, Lillian D. Wald died. She was a scientist and nurse and known as the Angel of Henry Street, where in New York she directed for more than four decades the Henry Street Visiting Nurse Service. Among her activities, she helped initiate the enactment of pure food laws in the U.S. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Listening to the Closing Mark Report from Illinois Public Media. It is a Wednesday afternoon. Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City joins us to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. It was a gully washer apparently around Boone, Iowa, in the Farm Progress Show. I think I saw reported last night something along the lines of 4 inches of rainfall in the last 24 hours. What can you tell me about the area, Drew?
Well, it's wet. We do have a little bit of a problem out there in Iowa. You know, Iowa's been hit so many times this summer with frequent storms just like this. Ames was another town that reported some pretty impressive 4-inch-plus amounts of rain overnight. So there was a number of areas across the center of Iowa that, again, got hit. In general, the rain event from northeast Kansas and northern Missouri through Iowa into Wisconsin and northwest Illinois produced about 3/4 of an inch to 2 inches generally. But there were, again, a number of counties out there reporting 3, 4, and greater than 4-inch amounts in some areas. So we are definitely wet again. Iowa dried down real nicely there for a while. The fields were really looking good again. I think there were still the issues, of course, with some of these other issues like sudden death and whatnot. But the excess moisture was really disappearing until last night, and now it's back again. And unfortunately, we're going to see some more rain occur in Iowa as we move forward through the night tonight and into the day tomorrow. And we'll see a little break after that for a couple of days, maybe 3 days or so. And then as we get close to the early part of next week, another round of rain will come in. So the western part of the Corn Belt in general is probably going to see rain a little bit more frequently than it would like to see at this time of the year, at least as we go through this next two-week period. The easternmost parts of the Midwest, of course, are going to continue to see a much drier scenario, with places like Ohio and Indiana and Kentucky really having a tough time getting meaningful rainfall more than once over the two-week period. The southeastern states and the northern delta will also be involved with this drier biased environment, at least for the next week to 10 days, and maybe a little bit longer than that.
Go to the hard red winter wheat growing areas, the Great Plains. Tell me how they're setting up for their sowing season for the winter wheat.
I think a lot of the region is looking real good at the moment. There is some dryness in eastern Colorado, western parts of Kansas, and southwestern Nebraska. In that high plains region there, we're not expecting a tremendous amount of rain for a while. Now, that will probably change a little later in the month, but for right now, at least for the next 2 weeks, that little pocket will probably be missed or get very limited amounts of rainfall. The rest of the wheat country, though, will do fairly well with that timely rainfall, and we'll gradually get some cooler air moving into the region, which will also be supportive for that process.
A couple, two or three other growing regions to check in on, maybe South America, how they look for their planting season yet to come. And then Ukraine and Russia and their dryness. And if you could stop with China, and you've only got about 40 seconds to do it all.
Well, in Argentina, we've got a chance for rain over the next couple of days. That is likely to be a favorable event for Buenos Aires, but not so good for the drought areas in the western part of that country. They still need substantial amounts of rain. And the drought from east Ukraine into the south-central parts of Russia is not going anywhere anytime soon. A few spits and spats is all that they will get. And in China, those rumors of frost and freezes over the next 10 days to 2 weeks are full of bunk. We do not expect any threatening weather in key grain or oilseed areas.
Thank you so much, Drew. I appreciate it.
Have a great day.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Stay with us if you can for the Farming World. I'm Todd Gleason. This is the Farming World from the Land Grant in Urbana-Champaign, the University of Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason from U of I Extension. On the line with us this afternoon from Boone, Iowa, is Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson. Ms. Vakes, thank you so much for being with us today.
You're welcome.
Well, you made the trip, Jackie, to Boone, Iowa, with the expectation of attending the Farm Progress Show. You made one day, but overnight last night, I saw 4 inches of rain. Drew Lerner just told us Ames, which is only about 8 miles away, had a 4-inch rainfall, too. I bet it's wet and nasty there. Did you make it out to the site today at all?
Actually, didn't make it out to the site. They called us early this morning and said that they were delaying the start to 10 o'clock and due to the extreme mud, and they just didn't even know if they were going to be able to go or not. They did open up, and I was scheduled to be on some panels with WILL, just two of them this morning late, and we decided that there just were not enough people coming in that the afternoon panels would have to go. So it's tough, and we have a weather forecast for more rain tonight. I can tell you that traveling out and coming across I-74 and I-80 on the way out here, when you get toward the Des Moines area, I mean, you actually see literal bean fields that have totally drowned out completely, and same thing with cornfields. Of course, they're in river bottom areas, but even when you travel north from the Des Moines area and you go up towards Boone to the Farm Progress site and at the Farm Progress site, you see a really anemic-looking corn, and you can tell that there was a lot of nitrogen leaching, very, very thin stalks. And actually, in talking with people yesterday, some of the greatest concerns beyond the heavy rains right now is wind. Some areas did have 50 and 60 mile an hour winds, and believe me, the corn that was damaged due to the too much moisture is not in any kind of shape to stand up to very much.
Yeah, well, I will assume that you haven't been out really of the hotel to take a look at wind damage that may have occurred last night, but the reports from the Farm Progress Show site, and they sent out, of course, a couple of press releases this morning saying that they would not open until 10 o'clock and that there had been some damage, wind damage, actually, on the site. A lot of wind and lightning there last night, along with the 4 inches of rainfall. I suppose it's all going to create a problem, not only for the Farm Progress Show, but if producers were worried about wind and lodging in that area, I bet they got it last night.
Well, there's no question, and that was one of the things that we really experienced yesterday, too. We had rain at about 7:30, quarter to 8 in the morning, and then, you know, the show opened up and people just came. It was really pretty impressive. The aisles were extremely muddy, and yet during the day, the wind just picked up like wild, and it dried everything out pretty much. I was surprised we didn't have wind damage already yesterday, because some of the tents, even the tent that we were in, was the top was just pushed up as far as it could possibly go without taking off, you know. So I think that it's a bad situation. I did talk to a number of people that some clients who are working out there, who are working for someone, and they said the parking lot was firm, but you could tell it was really, really wet in the areas that they were in. They said the visitor's parking lot was just like a sea of mud. And so because they were down on the exhibitor side, it was different. I can tell you, talking to guys from that area, there's a lot of depression. You know, and then you get guys that came in from Minnesota, have just some of the best crops they've ever had in their life. People coming in from northern Iowa, tremendous crops. But, you know, the area that's been hit hard has been hit really hard, and it just can't seem to get a break.
How did they fare last year? Were they as wet as everybody was last year, too? So this would be year two, I think possibly year three for them, for very, very wet weather in that area.
Absolutely. And 2 years ago when we were out here at Boone, We had rain, but it wasn't as bad. I mean, they weren't hit nearly as hard, but then the following year they got hit by the flood again. And so it's just been a real difficult situation for them. What's surprising is when you travel and you see the grass in the ditches, even dead, from all of the water that's run down it and so many times. And that's something, you know, you don't kill grass in ditches very easily, let's put it that way.
Boy, that's hard to do. You killed that. It's got to be underwater for a long time in order for grass to die from being wet.
Holy well, I can tell you, you know, all of the corn companies and all the seed companies are certainly feeling it because the seed plots all the way up there, there's nobody who looks very good. I don't think there's anybody at this point in time who's got anything to brag about at all. And you know, this is one of their biggest seed selling events of the year.
Yeah. Speaking of seed salesmen, you're located where? At the AgriGold tent. And you and Dave Dickey, our director of ag programming, are there along with, Sherm Newland is there and Chuck mm-hmm. Shelby is there from Risk Management. I think Jerry Goodell is supposed to be there. Dan Zwicker's with you from ADM Grain Group. Anybody else that I missed that's scheduled on the panels, do you remember?
Well, Sue Martin was scheduled, but
that's right.
Been ill, so
yes.
She hasn't been able to be there, but yes, Jerry Goodell is there this afternoon, basically.
Yeah, and he's with North America Risk Management. And you're on every, 25 minutes or so during the show day?
Yes. We're on 25 minutes, and then we're off about 15 minutes. It just depends upon, you know, if a show runs long. But most of the time, there's about 15 minutes in between. We're actually right on the aisle by the south entrance is where we are. And it's been good. The farmers have a lot of questions. There's a lot of guys, of course, in that particular area that are concerned because they feel like they've sold way too much. You know, pretty much like we've seen in Illinois where we've got guys that are concerned because they sold more and now don't necessarily have the production level. So there, you know, there's a concern. There's just no question about it. Of course, there is an eternal bull that never goes away. You know, pretty bullish just in general because it's hard not to be you see what it looks like.
Are they bullish both corn and beans? I mean, we've talked so much about the number of pods on beans. I can't imagine they really are, especially given the carryover that is expected by USDA.
No, they're not. I would have to say the bullishness is pretty much limited to the corn market for right now. You know, when you looked at the pod numbers that we saw, that's a 10 to 15% increase. Well, if you think of sudden death syndrome, which there's a lot of sudden death syndrome as you come across I-80. You know, when you get into eastern Iowa, not quite so bad, but the further into Iowa you go, the worse it gets. And so, but you know, if you lose 10 to 15% on that, that could be offset by how high the pod counts are in other parts of the field. So I don't think they are quite as bullish on beans just yet. And you know, the rain that we had today that came into a greater part of the Midwest, certainly I would think would be a good bean-filling rain. So the market looked that way today.
Yeah.
You know, ended up down a few.
It did look that way today. A little rainfall here, not much, just enough sort of to wet the grass this morning. I know that the combines, at least one of them, was rolling that's the first one I've seen as I made my way in town on Route 150 from my home. And they weren't quite moving, but the semis were lined up, and I don't think it was going to be long before they had that field all opened up and running. You talked about producers there in the immediate area and in Iowa in general, thinking that maybe they had oversold their crop, and they were asking questions probably about how to get out of that and what to do to cover themselves. Did you or any of the rest of the analysts have some good ideas?
Well, you know, some of the things that we talked about, of course, no one seemed to be, at least in that general area, at a point yet where they were ready to buy back contracts. You know, they didn't feel like they were in that bad a shape in that respect. But we did talk about some of the things you can do. You know, so often we talk about selling up to the crop insurance levels. And, you know, that's a perfectly fine thing to do. You've got coverage at that. But one of the things you can do is you can certainly cover yourself with more puts if you've become uncomfortable. If you don't want to sell beyond 50%, let's say, due to experiences like we're having this year. And we did talk about that. We talked about, buying back contracts if it was necessary and talking with people. And some of these guys, you know, just like we have some of our guys in Illinois where we sold HTAs, we're sold at that, you know, higher level, at the 470 and the 460 level. so they could get out of them and still make money potentially. Yeah, so it's something that a guy's got to be thinking about. But, you know, the overall concern that I saw yesterday, more than anything, is about the economy and how the economy may potentially impact, you know, the commodity markets. There's a lot of people very nervous about what's going to happen when we get to the election time in November.
So they're worried about a double dip.
Very much so. Very much so. And you know, all the normal questions. Will the EPA, you know, raise the ethanol levels? You know, well, you know, the one thing that we also have to caution people about is we've been using and blending more ethanol than what the mandate has called for. For anything we blend above the mandate, we get a certificate for that that can be used to meet the mandate the next year. So the thing we have to be concerned about with the ethanol, more so than EPA raising it to 15%, is the profitability of that industry. And so I think the overriding message that was coming out was, one thing we do know for sure is price can certainly ration what happens when you're talking about having such a strong export market like we do right now. At the moment, you know, it seems as if we're in really good shape. They're coming in and they're just buying, and we're selling to people we never even thought about, like selling to Germany, you know, and selling to Egypt for wheat today, those types of things. But we have to be conscious of whether or not we're making money and how much risk we're willing to take.
Right. I want to go back to something you mentioned about the ethanol certificates, because we don't talk about this very much, but there is a secondary market there that if the blender manages to sell, and the end user, I suppose, manages to sell and use more ethanol than is required by the mandate, then they get certificates for that overage that they can apply to futures year mandate, so that they can bring up a low year based, you know, if ethanol is expensive, they can use that certificate in the future. And if we were to get into a space where ethanol might be expensive, where the ethanol plants aren't really making money on it at the same time, they wouldn't have to buy at all. They wouldn't have to buy as much. And they could use those certificates, and that could put a real hurt onto the ethanol industry, I would think.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, when you're looking at 4.7 billion bushels of expected corn to be used in that industry, we can't afford to lose any. You know, I think that's something people don't think about. And when you think back to 2009, we saw it happen then. You know, we saw it happen in 08 when we got too high, and all of a sudden we started to see things slow back down. The industry became less profitable or even turned to the negative side, and yet we never heard anything about them not making the mandated level. So I just think that it's important that producers understand that even with a 15% increase, we may even be somewhere around 12% right now because of the overages that we've been producing. And so what does that really mean to your bottom line? What it means is that you have to have a plan. You've got to know how much money you're making, and you've got to execute that to protect yourself, because you don't know. This is a huge market. And since we stepped into the energy industry, which is what we did when we started with ethanol and biodiesel, we are in a world market, not only in the world food market, but in the world energy market. And corn right now, when you look at the big picture, if you take a Dow Jones chart and you look at the Dow Jones, corn's extremely sensitive to the Dow Jones. What else is sensitive to the Dow Jones? Crude oil. So that's why I believe a lot of people are concerned, and I am too, when you talk about the election coming in November. It's the perception that Wall Street's going to have as to what's going to happen after that election that could really impact us. So our best opportunities might come before then.
Jackie, we'll talk with you again in just a moment. Jackie Vakes is with Stuart Peterson. She is in Boone, Iowa at the Farm Progress Show there today and tomorrow. Of course, today they're rained out, or at least her part of the program is. But the Farm Progress Show is open today. There's some expectation of more weather there for tomorrow. We'll have to keep an eye out for the press releases and up to date with what Dave Dickey, Director of Ag Programming, tell us is happening on the Farm Progress Show site. More with Jackie Vakes from Stuart Peterson when we return here on The Farming World.
It's National Cherry Popover Day. modern-day cherry production began in the mid-1800s when a Presbyterian missionary living in northern Michigan planted cherry trees, and much to the surprise of other farmers, the trees flourished. It's also St. Verana's Day, patron of millers. On this day in agricultural history in 1819, J.J. Wood patented a plow with interchangeable parts. In 1826, Alfred Eli Beach was born, an American inventor. He also was publisher of Scientific American magazine. In 1906, Carl August Fulkers was born. He was the first to isolate vitamin B12. By the way, Fulkers was born in Decatur, Illinois, and he graduated from the University of Illinois in 1928 with a degree in chemistry. In 1914, Martha, the last surviving passenger pigeon, died at the Cincinnati Zoo, the species having been commercially hunted to extinction. And in 1940, Lillian D. Wald died. She was a scientist and nurse and known as the Angel of Henry Street, where in New York she directed for more than four decades the Henry Street Visiting Nurse Service. Among her activities, she helped initiate the enactment of pure food laws in the U.S. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to The Farming World. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. On the phone line with us today from Boone, Iowa, at the Farm Progress Show, or more rightfully, in a hotel near the Farm Progress Show, is Jackie Vakes of Stewart Peterson. Jackie, thanks for staying with us this afternoon for the program. I know it's rainy and wet, and you weren't able to really to run out to the site, or wasn't necessary to get out to the site for the panels, and stayed put for the afternoon. I do want to pick up where we left off with the ethanol industry. The EIA, we heard earlier, that's the energy, the International Energy Association, in our newscast earlier, told us that June was a very, very busy month for the ethanol industry, that there was both record supply and record demand for ethanol. But your fear is that that could slip, and that the ethanol industry, and I suppose in Iowa, they're a whole lot more concerned about that than we are in Illinois, because they have a whole lot of plants there. And their basis has jumped or narrowed up a lot because of that. Do you think that producers understand how important that industry is for them to continue, and what's at risk at this point?
Well, I think they do understand. And one of the other questions that, of course, was presented yesterday was, will the ethanol subsidy be actually legally enacted again in December 2010 when it expires? And that is, of course, because of the fact that we saw the bean oil subsidy just lay by the wayside. And we all know what that's done to the bean oil industry.
Yeah, it's destroyed it, right? They haven't ever gone back and taken it up in Congress.
Not at all. Not at all. And so, you know, I do believe that the producers are very aware of what that means. When you look at the fact that if you take 4.7 billion bushels, you're looking at one-third of the U.S. corn crop is going into ethanol. We're quickly approaching the level that feed used to take for, you know, for an industry in the United States. And so I think I myself, and that's another concern as to whether or not they will do it. The word on the street right now is they probably will drop the subsidy from 45 to 36. But I think after what we saw happen to the biodiesel subsidy, the farmers are very, very nervous about that. You could see you can certainly see a reflection of what you just talked about, the heavy usage in the ethanol, even in the ethanol futures today. Everything was up straight across the board, and we're looking at much better prices than we had in a while. But if anything falters on the ethanol side and we begin to build, and that's what we've been seeing on the bean oil side, you know, the bean oil that they're still projecting that we're going to have still at like a 2 million bushel usage level on the bean oil side. And yet that has been building, and I think that's just because of the fact that we are not using as much for the biodiesel industry as what they had anticipated. Same thing could happen to us in corn.
Talk about the soybean market as it relates to bean oil just a bit and how important the products, meal and oil, both are to the price of soybeans.
Well, there's absolutely no question about the importance. If we're crushing heavy for oil because the demand from, let's say, within the country or outside the country is extremely large, the meal side of things can become cumbersome. But basically, we haven't seen any burdensome numbers on meal at all. For right now, we're almost living the perfect dream. We've got good numbers for meal. We've got the nearby meal, you know, well above $300. And as you go out, we're in the 290s all the way out through this next year. That's pretty fantastic numbers for the meal side of things. The oil side of things, when you look at it, we call it a crush. You have your beans, your raw beans, of course, which produce oil and meal. And if any of those parts of the puzzle begin to falter, it affects everything else because it impacts how much your ending stocks are. And so I think that's where we always have concerns about the livestock industry because they're such heavy users of meal. We have concerns about biodiesel. We have concerns about food-grade oil and always about what palm oil is doing because it's a trigger for what our prices are. So everything is interrelated, and we can't afford to have any parts of that fall apart.
And that includes, and I suppose that includes Congress, but I'm thinking that maybe Congress is thinking that they've been in this business long enough and it's gotten big enough that it's time to wean it off of those tax subsidies. The industry itself, of course, would not think that's the case. How about you?
Well, I think, especially in the case of the biodiesel, I think it was too early. That's still, the industry's been around, but it's still an industry that has a difficult time in terms of being able to find markets. There are very large markets. The largest user of biodiesel right now is the United States Navy. But at the same time, if you're a producer of biodiesel, you have to have some place that you can get it to be able to, and then you have to have someone who's willing to put it into a pump and they have to be willing to use it. I think it was too early for them to do that. I think the proper movement is just like they've done in the corn ethanol side of things. You gradually wean them off. You don't just go from a dollar down to zero or from 45 cents down to zero. And especially in an industry where that money isn't going to the ethanol industry. It's going to the blender. And you have to have some type of incentive for a blender to want to use the ethanol that's being produced.
Jackie, we appreciate you being with us today. Thanks so much, and good luck with the rainfall out there and visiting with all the producers in the AgriGold tent.
Thank you very much.
Jackie,
have a great day.
You too. Jackie Vakes is with Stuart Peterson. Joined us here on The Farming World. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. Do visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. You can listen to The Farming World inside our Closing Market Report podcast right there on the web, or you can always look it up on iTunes. You have a good afternoon.